and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Fiona. And today we're on week six of our conception to production summer season.
Yes.
A weekly insight into how you conceive a podcast from that first seed of an idea into its fullest blossom.
Ooh, exciting. Mm. I'm blossoming right now as well.
And in this episode, we are delighted to welcome the return of Robert Cudmore, one of the founding fathers of ADPP, to talk to Lindsay Graham of Terms Podcast, which is wonderful.
Grounded up one.
It is a grounded up one.
I don't
one.
Know if it's... I'm allowed to listen yet.
Yes, I think you are. But no, superb to have a political themed podcast.
Yes.
And what a podcast. Amazing stuff. So if you're interested in this or indeed in any of the others in this season, please do email us.
Yes.
Drum roll. Sarah.
On podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Hooray!
Do I get sweeties?
You get
now?
A sticker and sweets. Yeah.
Awesome.
And of course, when you've had a look on our website to the links to Terms and listen to that, do head along then to the podcasthost.com. What will you find there, Sarah?
Oh, goodness, all sorts. Whatever you want to do with podcasting is there. If you want to find out about mics, if you want to find out about technical setups, if you want to look for books that might help you in your study of whatever you're studying, then head on over there. They've got lots of fun things to browse. You'll be lost for days, actually. So make sure you're back for next week for our next summer season episode.
Yes, our final one, indeed. But in the meantime, here's Lindsay Graham.
Woohoo!
Lindsay Graham, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm glad to finally speak to you.
Yes, me too.
So I'll just start by asking you to explain exactly who you are and what you do.
Okay. I am a human. I live in Dallas, Texas, and I am the creator and a lot of the technical resource behind the podcast Terms.
Okay. So we'll talk about the podcast Terms. Do you think you could just explain where you began with that and how, and where did the story idea come from, the conception to production?
Sure. Okay. So in the later months of 2015, an audio production company I was involved in was wanting to put together their first audio drama. And we had an idea that we could do something good, something spectacular. But then we had no ideas on the table. So we went around to most of our very creative theater folks and got a bunch of pitches. One of the pitches that I threw in late was eventually the idea for Terms. And that idea came from a late night drinking session in a dorm room in college in the early 90s that has stuck with me. So it was actually, I think that the Clinton election cycle, you know, he was coming in 92, the very first election I was able to vote in. And, it, you know, as elections come and go, they educate the public on the process and everything. And it occurred to me that, you know, what would it take for a president just say, nope, not leaving. I'm not stepping down. This other clown who's coming in is not going to be president. And it seems such a, you know, outrageous and well, just so outrageous that it's interesting that one person's will to say no could upturn not only just a country, but the entire world. So I kind of pitched that almost exactly as briefly as I just did to my writing partners, and they loved it. So we started thinking through a little more about what the ramifications are, how we wanted to personify these different characters and the setup. And of course, this is late November, early December in 2015. So the entire circus of the 2016 election had barely begun. We had no idea that it was going to turn out the way it did. Of course, it did. And, you know, it took us about the almost the whole year to write and get the gumption and resources behind us and the time to produce Terms. And so we came out, we were ready to roll on election night and actually debuted a week after. So November 27th, I think.
Was the writing influenced at all by the ongoing election? Like, were any late changes considering what was going on in the real world?
It couldn't help but be influenced. Although the entire arc of the story was written again early in 2016. We have complete edits of the first two episodes from April or May. So still well into the middle of the election cycle. We abandoned those because dramatically they weren't strong enough. And so we revisited them and did them again closer to October when we really had some momentum behind us. But yes, to the question, we certainly changed things. Or rather, you know, interestingly, we didn't change things. One of the early decisions was, you know, we need our ascending politician Dunwalk to have a catchphrase, and we decided that his catchphrase would be "America First," in a in a ridiculous throwback to previous, just, you know, that slogan has some historical baggage, but it is also just perfect for a populist insurgent candidate like Dunwalk is. And literally 7 days later, Trump is using the same slogan. He didn't carry it too far and made America, you know, "Make America Great Again," the actual slogan. But we were just chewing, you know, our fingers off in I don't know. When it occurred, someone texted me, "Oh my God, Trump just used our slogan." I sat in silence for about 3 minutes and thinking, what do we do? You know, do we have to rewrite this thing? And I quickly decided, no, we don't rewrite this thing. It's a better story. If anyone comes up to us and says, "Hey, you stole the headlines," then I can honestly say to them, no, we didn't. We were writing ridiculous political fiction, and I can't tell you what the coincidence to real political reality is, what the commentary is there.
That's interesting. Well, if I can ask about the cast then, casting and funding, how did you go about that?
Casting was rather easy. Dallas has an established theater scene, but also an established voiceover scene due to a company called Funimation, who does a lot of Japanese dubbing here. So there's a wealth of actors, and they're all friends, you know. So it's a very tight-knit community, and we knew who was who and what their strengths were. In fact, we started kind of writing to the cast. It was just a bunch of text messages. "Hey, you want to be in a podcast? What's a podcast? Oh, well, let me explain. Here you go." And they would say, sure. We did have all the actors on contract. You know, we paid them an hourly wage. It was all income deferred. And honestly, you know, Terms has not recouped those costs yet. It's a job, but it's, you know, among friends, and so we knew who we were going to cast pretty quickly. Within a 2-hour conversation, this person, that person, if they're available, they'd be perfect. So it was just a matter of scheduling after that.
And do you need any British voices for season two?
Interestingly, we might. I can't explain how or why, because I want to keep the suspense there.
Sure.
We might need Russian voices. We might need Pakistani voices. We're going global. I mean,
oh wow.
If you haven't, well, you've listened to the entire series. So at the end, you realize that, should I spoil this?
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, in the end, we realize that the American political system has now probably become a problem for the global political system, and so our story expands.
You know, it's interesting just how closely it really does resemble real life in terms of it becomes more of a global thing and everyone's watching on. There's a saying, isn't there, in fiction, that fiction has to make sense, whereas real life doesn't.
Right.
So
No, and you know, it's no secret that I'm on the left side of the dial politically here, but I'm still pretty much a centrist. And I'm interested in drama more than I'm interested in politics. That's not really true. I'm interested in both. But
you can keep them separate for the best part.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm not. My dramatic interest is not driven by a political agenda. But there is absolutely no way I could have written with a straight face any, especially the last few weeks, anything that has happened in the United States political spectrum. It doesn't make sense. And I'm still waiting for that moment where the adults say, right then, put away all your toys, you're going to bed.
Yeah. Funnily enough, the reason I got into Terms was a couple of months ago, I watched The West Wing for the first time.
All right.
And I ended up, every time everybody else went to bed, I binged 3 episodes a night and mm-hmm. then the next night again. And I got through it in like a month or two, the whole 7 series.
Yeah.
And then I went into the Facebook group for the podcast and asked, hey, are there any political audio dramas? And everybody rattled off a couple, and Terms was like number one in everybody's list. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, The West Wing is obviously very left-leaning to some people's perspectives right. as a Democrat president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the things that they face, and they're so grown up about it, and they do the right thing, and it's a very moral program. And then contrasted with the goings on and the issues that are faced today, it's really interesting. Again, fiction has to make sense.
Right.
And you can expect everyone to behave themselves more or less. Even they even painted the Republicans as being more or less the same. They're good guys as well. They just have a different outlook.
Sure, right. And I think that's the aspiration of politics. You know, that no one's here to do ill. I've thought about The West Wing, you know, quite a bit through writing Terms and contemplating it Terms afterwards. I think I reviewed a lot of the early seasons after we finished Terms. And you're right. I mean, there's an entire episode built around C.J. Craig's frustrated misuse of a term, you know, like in a press briefing. She's polished and perfect, and then she just lets slip one thing, and that's how the plot for an entire episode. Everyone's just being crucified in the press. It outrages the right. There's popular uprising because whatever, you know, and then you think that was maybe 5 words spoken by a press secretary, and that was the plot for an entire hour-long fictional series. And then, you know, Spicer or Mooch will sit, you know, get up and speak.
Yeah, and say Hitler didn't use chemical weapons right. or something. And he was just, you know, you knew what I meant. What are you worried about, sort of thing. So
yeah,
blasé.
And yeah. You know, there is something if. I didn't know what he meant, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt. Of course. Yeah, I knew what he meant, you know, but he's flying off the cuff and he didn't think deeply. And I don't think deeply all the time. I'm certainly not thinking deeply in this interview. And so maybe I will say something like that. But
yeah,
that's excusable for me and you. It just is not at that level of play.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's what's more worrying, isn't it? It's like, well, why is this guy in charge? You know, right. Why is that person doing the press briefings if he's more like Toby Ziegler, who's completely out of his depth in that position?
Right.
You know, and he should be doing something else.
I would hope that that my problem with those episodes, for instance, is one of foundering incompetence and not political spectrum. You know, I would hope that if that same phrase were uttered by a Democrat, that then I would be just as disgusted. The likelihood is my cognitive biases will not allow me to be just as disgusted, but I hope to be disgusted, right?
Yeah. It's like a sports team. If your guy does something wrong, it's like, nah, I get over it. But if the other guy does it, you want blood, you know, you want him sent right. off or whatever. Yeah. And we're all biased like that. So could I ask you also about the, you mentioned the costs and recouping the costs. Are you and the team doing anything to special to market terms? I mean, the going's never going to be better, I would say.
Right. So we were, this was our first podcast, so all around we were amateurs, and we've garnered a level of success that I think is proportionate to the product. You know, I'm proud of terms, but certainly not to our experience in the game. And I say that because we would have done a lot of things differently in terms of the marketing, in terms of doing more research of what the monetization strategies are for podcasts. Because at the time, we were looking to do this as professionally as possible. We took our time. We had a lot of very talented people working on this. And we've always recognized that talent needs to be compensated. The good thing about a podcast is that there is a long tail. So hopefully that when season two comes out and we make maybe, some adjustments, then there will be some according lift in season one. It'll get there in terms of meeting its obligations. But we didn't do any crowdsourcing of fundraising. We didn't have a huge social media push. Our focus was so intense on just getting it out. Week to week, we were rushing to meet deadline. We were picked up by a podcast distributor, Wondery, who's been, fantastic in terms, and they took an enormous load off of us in terms of their own marketing and a lot of the technical behind the scenes internet stuff. They just said, hey, we'll host it here. And then all the advertising interfacing, they've been our liaison, our agent there. And so we just are really told what to do. And then they do it for their clients. So that's been a fantastic relationship. But I think we could have, if we had a little bit of foresight, done a better job. In terms of quite a few things, marketing, we didn't even have it. We had a teaser for 2 weeks. There's 6 hours before we went live, we finally got our logo. It was the focus was on the podcast, and it really wasn't on any of the trappings afterwards, which is a total shame. And I should be absolutely embarrassed because, I have an MBA in marketing. I'm schooled in this stuff, and I didn't pay attention to it.
Well, you're not alone, because I think it's one of the biggest and most common questions in the group is, hey, what do you guys do to get your stuff out there, your marketing, and how do you monetize a podcast? And nobody's got the one true secret or anything. It's not like, 6 weeks to tighter apps. There's no such thing other than, hard work and experimentation to some extent.
No, and that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're into, whether it's tighter abs or playing guitar or eating healthier, or that, there are no 7 crazy tips to getting a better anything. It's just doing it. And, I saw a funny Onion headline that man monetizes podcasts by selling all recording equipment.
Oh, I saw that.
yeah. And, there's a lot of truth to that. The same thing can be said about a home studio, which I also have built. And there's no way that I've done any better than breaking even. That's just this is an industry in which there's a lot of demand, or a lot of supply rather. It's a fantastic way for people who are aspiring anything, aspiring writers, aspiring comic book illustrators, aspiring filmmakers, to get into a genre adjacent space and start creating. And the barrier to entry is low, so therefore the competition is high. And the only way to get noticed is either have someone else's money to spend on marketing, but primarily is to do the best you can. I mean, believe in it, keep at it, and improve yourself. I really hope that I can follow that same advice as we continue the series of terms.
I guess word of mouth is like going to be a good way, especially through podcasts like this and online groups and stuff. I mean, when we started the group a good few years ago, we didn't know that many people, many different audio producers. And now people have either started just in the last couple of years, or we've all just simply found each other in the darkness, if you like. So right. We're hoping we can establish a bigger and bigger group, if you like. Not just within Facebook, but in general, we all know each other, and hopefully the really decent stuff will rise to the top. But I think a lot of that's got to do with the people involved with the podcast, like the writers and maybe more importantly, the actors, because it's going to be a few of them. So in terms of marketing and getting it out there and just general promotion, are the actors... do they take part in that off their own back to some extent and say, hey, look at this, look what I've been in, and do you feel you get some return from that?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. It depends. Some actors are more enthusiastic than others, and some are social media introverts versus extroverts. We've absolutely, pretty much every friend and family of the cast has listened to Terms. I mean, that's almost a given. But... A few have taken it farther, and some have established audiences because of their work in other projects, most notably anime. So their reach is even further. I don't know exactly how much. I mean, I can tell you that the audience of the actors, let's say that they reached. We probably got about 20 actors. Let's say that they reach 100 people each, right? So,
wow, yeah.
So that's 2,000 people. Well, that's for Terms. That's welcome, but only a small portion of the entire audience. We've gotten past the point where friends of friends are the audience. Thankfully, I'm really, really satisfied with that. But to make it a self-sustaining enterprise, which would be the goal, the audience really needs to be very, very large, at the level that we're at, where we have 20 actors and we're promising them an hourly wage So it's a different ball game from perhaps some other podcasts.
Are the actors all local to you? I take it there's no remote recording and they all come to a local studio or something.
Yeah, they all come to my studio. And honestly, we never thought of doing it otherwise. It was through your group and groups like it that I even contemplated the idea of a remote recording. The reason for that are a couple. One, we have a good stable of fantastic actors here, so we didn't need to branch out. Two, it's just so much easier and to get great performances when you're in the room with them. You can viscerally feel and direct their performance. And then I have complete control of the audio quality as a third point. That does not mean that we won't use remote actors in the future. It just wasn't something that we contemplated for the first season.
Sure. So that probably helped the post-production process because many producers that use remote recording, it's often a delay in getting the audio in. And if you've got to have something done again, you've got to email back and wait again for the stuff to come in. So... what was the post-production process like for you? How long did it take?
Well, once we've recorded, and I'm trying to think of a good ratio, we probably recorded at somewhere between, depending on the scene, a 4 to 8 to 1, right? So for every 10 minutes of final audio, it took us 40 or 80 minutes of recording, which means that at the end of a 4-hour session, you might have 16 to 32 hours of audio to go through. And that's a slog. So we tried to in the room, in the moment, tag things in our recording software to make that easier. But it still needs to be gone through, and that was the first step. So dialogue editing. We'll have someone with the script run through all the different takes, assemble their best take, and then it landed in my lap as a very rough dialogue edit with no sound effects, no nothing. Then I will come and as the final kind of audio editor, start piecing together the audio universe, which includes both cleaning up the audio from the dialogue, making small decisions about different edits here and there, and then building the ambient and acoustic environments. So after that, it's a revision process. It went out to the writers and I would get feedback and we would talk things through. You know, I'd maybe do an alternate mix here or there. You know, sometimes it got really specific, like this footstep is out of place. After a while, we arrived at a final version, usually, 3 or 4 hours after our deadline.
You make it sound pretty straightforward.
Well, you know, in a way it is. It's intense, detail-oriented, long, arduous work. But in terms of stages, it's record, dialogue edit, audio edit, you're done.
So as long as you've got that process in your mind, you know what you're going to do, you know which order you're going to do it in, then just follow the steps, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly paint by numbers, but it's something close.
So what were the main problems, if any, in getting the whole podcast together, whether it was directing or writing or producing or anything?
The podcast lives and succeeds only in the quality of the writing. I could also say the quality of the performance. You know, one will compensate for the other. If you've got both, then you're really doing well. But our problems came from writing, I think. We had not written for audio only ever, so our team was used to either stage or screen, and we had to adapt our expectations of what we could pull off. So many times we were just aching for a wide camera shot to establish a scene or show certain hints or clues without telling the audience, and you know, of course, we just can't do that. Transitions we had to learn how to do. We had some crazy ideas of how things would artfully segue from one to the other. And, you know, in the end, it was confusing and just a mess. So we opted for simpler descriptions and leaned on music a little more. So learning to write for audio was difficult. Learning to pace for audio. In the same sense, on stage or on screen, the pacing is slower in a way because you have people like doing small things like picking up a glass of water or walking down a hall, and that takes up interest and time, and it's just not there. Acting was in the booth. We had to learn as well. A lot of our actors are very well regarded voiceover actors, and they're accustomed to doing narration for all sorts of commercial projects. And that is absolutely not what we wanted for Terms. We are not selling soap. We are not explaining the newest HR policies. We are trying to get you, our audience, pull in and immersed in our little universe. So we had to figure out a way to get actors to act into a microphone in a reasonable and controlled manner, but still really act. They were unaccustomed to moving their bodies. They're used to being very still and rigid in front of a microphone. And, you know, one of the first things that we realized was that it's just their self-restraint, their restraining of their body is restraining their performance. So we wanted them to move and engage. all of the actors came in cold. They never had really seen the script ahead of time. Just a great testament to the actors. They got better and better, and so did we in terms of pulling a performance out of them. But it was largely all cold reads. And then finally, I think in the edit and in the booth in recording, we realized that that the writing also has to be trimmed down and pared down. We are going for a very real feeling. These are people talking to them, to each other. And, you know, the easiest thing to point out is how often we use first names. You know what I mean? Robert. Sure. Of course I do, Lindsay. Yeah. Just to establish, and it's so easy on the page to put, you know, someone's first name, call them out. But that never happens. And even still, I think if you go back and listen to terms, names are said out loud far too many times. But
I like that, to be honest, because it's easy to forget what someone's name is because, you know, it doesn't get mentioned very often. And you start wondering to yourself, did they ever tell me their name?
Right.
And then you're not listening to the story anymore. So I'd rather have it more often than less. For instance, you ever seen Rick and Morty?
I have not, but I've seen it flash on my social media streams quite a bit.
Right. Well, the creators, they said that like it was Dan Harmon, I'm sure he admitted that they rely on using names a lot for the dialogue. So the grandfather, the mad scientist Rick, he's always saying, "You know, Morty, come on, Morty, we've got to go do this, Morty, Morty. Listen to me, Morty," over and over again, to the point where at the end of season one, they even had like a monologue where he's just ranting at his grandson, saying Morty over and over again in between little snippets of madness.
Right.
And he admits that he relies on that as a kind of verbal crutch because they kind of freestyle the dialogue. But I think it's a good idea, a good way of getting that into people's minds. So I wouldn't worry too much personally about you annoying people.
Right. And I agree, you know, like it's not bothersome to me, but we became aware of it and we probably cut out about half as often as it happened. So you can imagine how chock full of damn it, Jims, there were.
Right.
So, but that's an easy example. You know, the exposition is really tough. You know, here we are talking about arcane subparagraphs of different amendments to the Constitution and you know, parliamentarian rules, and you have to explain it because no one understands it, but doing so in a manner that makes sense and seems at all realistic is really difficult.
Yeah, I think that's the curse of anyone that knows how something is made. They know when the flaws are obvious, you know, whereas somebody watching a movie and seeing two characters and one's explaining something out loud to the other one, the likes of us would be like, oh, here we go, exposition, go on, explain it then, just ram it in our faces. And everybody else would be like, well, what are you talking about? They're just having a conversation.
Yeah.
But so we're, you know, hypersensitive to that sort of thing, I think. And you have to try and desensitize yourself a little bit and say, right, well, what would be acceptable to the listener? And it's the same with music as well. And I know musicians that play live will berate themselves and each other when someone missed a certain note.
Yeah.
And the audience are like, well, it was great. I don't know.
Yeah.
I liked it.
No, I totally understand. And, you know, but we're, especially in audio drama, we have this horrible conundrum in which we cannot literally show and not tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult. And I was... Aaron Sorkin had this, you know, talked about this how difficult exposition is, because he's obviously doing the same thing in West Wing and many other things. He's got these prattling, you know, fast-paced monologues about what's happening.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing that was important to me to listen that he conveyed was that you can't have two experts explain to themselves because they never would. You know, two NASA rocket scientists talking about how a rocket works is just stupid.
Yeah.
But a NASA scientist talking to his granddaughter about how a rocket works, that's perfect because you need to find, you know, the avatar, the stand-in for the audience. Who doesn't know in this world that can represent who doesn't know in the real world?
Right. I guess in the West Wing, that's why they always, everybody walked around with one of their underlings so that they can explain it to them.
Right. Yeah, I think half the cast was there just to be, you know, told what's going on.
So can I ask, since it's a political podcast and it's the first one I've listened to, the kind of feedback you've had from the audience, considering the nature of it? I mean, it's not a sci-fi podcast or fantasy or anything like that. This is real life. So, what kind of feedback have you had?
It varied. You know, certainly when we first came out, there was a lot of pointing at us and then reality and saying, how did they do it? These similarities are astounding. There's a very interesting divide between our audience. You know, we have conservative and liberal listeners. I would say we have more liberal than conservative listeners, but there is a strong portion of the audience that is conservative. And thankfully, they react to the podcast in pretty much the way we wanted them to. You know, this was a very tricky thing to pull off, an attempt at nonpartisan discussion of politics or government from three pretty liberal partisan people. But we really tried to not make this a screed. The conservative reception to terms was really heartening. Where there is argument, it's either on a spectrum of just them just being trolls. You know, we are all social justice warrior snowflakes, and this is, you know, our podcast is trash. But, you know, they would have said that of you know, 60 Minutes or a news program. So they got into the characters, and they thought the politics was intriguing. The cloak and dagger stuff that's in there, and so I was really happy to have feedback from a political spectrum. You know, that marked a success for me.
Do you ever combat that kind of partisan feedback by saying, well, look, A, the president in question, we didn't name any really evil policies like deporting people en masse or building a huge wall or, they're deciding not to bother about climate change. We'll just see what happens, that kind of thing. And the fact that the incumbent president that's meant to be leaving and is deciding to go against the democratic will of the people could technically be considered the bad guy.
Oh, I think you should be very suspicious of his motives. However, well positioned and handsome and thoughtful and smart he is.
Yeah, and he's got a very sensible accent, if you like, whereas the new president sounds a little bit like he's from somewhere specific, maybe even one of those states that votes against the way I would vote. So it's easy right. For me to project that and say, yeah, he's definitely the bad guy, the guy with the accent, the arrogant guy that right. Has belief in himself. How dare he? You know, he's the bad guy.
Right.
So, I mean, do you ever have to say these things and do people come around?
I don't know. Honestly, I've not engaged in a conversation like that because I don't know that there's any utility in it. If someone says, that Pierce is a traitor, then that's okay because he might be. You know, if they say Dunwalk's a great guy, then that's okay because he might be. You know, we didn't really tell you how bad either one of these men or good they are. They're opposed and they have different methods. What bothers me is dismissal of the entire premise or because that's just silly. You know, someone who says that this would never happen is the same person who will within the next 10 minutes walk into a Star Trek film.
Right.
You know, so the last time I actually had a the largest political scandal that terms ever, you know, bubbled up was a conversation I had with David Reinstrom about kind of the politics or my personal politics, which are rather centrist. And we were talking about punching Nazis and whether that's good or bad. And I, you know, the vociferous objection to me personally or terms as a political statement really often is it's either dismissed outright by the right or pointed at as I don't know. I'm having trouble because we've been you know accused of turning our backs on disenfranchised people. You know, I'd said that I think it is wrong to punch Nazis, and I still do. You know, I'm a free speech believer, and I think there are certain boundaries on free speech for sure. But that does not mean that suddenly I'm going to turn my back on social injustice. Nor does the fact that we tried to write a podcast that resembles reality mean that we've turned our backs on gender. We've got a fair amount of complaints that all the women characters that we didn't pass the Bechdel test.
Right.
And I've actually listened to that criticism and assessed it and kind of one third agreed. I think we probably could have made some stronger choices in our women characters. But at the same time, the women characters, the complaint is they're all wives and secretaries. And that's not exactly true. They're first wives and, you know, and executive secretaries. And I don't even know where the secretary thing comes from. But invariably, I've already got myself in trouble by bringing up this subject.
Sure.
But on both sides, the pointing and objection seems to be a little unreasonable. And I think that's just what you get when you go too far to one extreme.
Well, you know, if you're trying to make an accurate podcast that reflects reality, just take a look at the current cabinet. You know, there's not a whole lot of women there either.
No, and that's absolutely true, and it's a very good defense. However, I do also understand the argument that we are creating a fictional universe in which we have every opportunity to increase the exposure of competent, intelligent women or minorities. It's not necessarily there's no obligation to do so, but there might be it's just a good idea, and I agree with that. To an point, you know, clearly if I made it an all female cast, that's just ridiculous. There's some sort of balance point, and that's what I said. You know, I've certainly seriously considered every argument levied against us, and I hope to improve in moderate increments with every single episode.
And, you know, Game of Thrones and George Martin, they've received a lot of criticism as well for having a heck of a lot of violence of different types, you know, particularly towards women in these things. And was it really necessary to have this kind of scene or that? And again, he's saying, well, that's life, especially in that kind of society. It's going to happen. I can write you a series where everybody's friends and nobody raises their voices if you like, but are you going to enjoy it and are you going to believe it? So you have to ride the wave a little bit and just say, well, this is what I set out to do. In his case and yours, in different ways, you wanted to set out to make something that was fairly accurate and reflected society. And it should in no way reflect what you would like society to be like, of course. And that's the important thing.
Right.
But maybe you're just trying to paint a picture. I mean, you know, people that make dystopian futures. Nobody wants zombies to actually roam the earth.
Well, they're being very fair to zombies and placing them so prominently. It's difficult. The whole thing. I think if it's just one of the risks you take in creating anything and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Because the unfortunate part is someone's going to tell you and you're going to be surprised by what they actually think. My final word on this is that I'm sensitive to the criticisms, and I think about them. And where I really think there can be improvement, I'm going to make it.
Excellent. Okay, well, I'll ask you then, funnily enough, about ambitions. This is one of the questions you'll have been asked the most, besides the art reflecting reality thing.
Mm-hmm.
The new series two. No pressure, but where are we on it?
Okay. We're way farther behind than I wanted to be. At the end of season one, had the luxury of a fully formed plot almost in the first two or three meetings. We knew exactly where we were going, and we went there. We had fun doing it. Season two is much more of a blank page, and that has presented us problems in the writing and conception phases, which we are still in. In addition, season one had us constrained by the just regular and orderly, you know, way of doing business. I can look up the Constitution. I can you know, read the rules of engagement in this or that political arena and understand how things would work. In season two, none of that is actually true either. We've blown the world up and we're trying to put it back together, and that takes a lot of effort. And so we are behind. I have a solution, I think, to get something out there. And I don't know if I'm going to embargo this or not, but I'll tell you, and then I'll think about it and let you know.
Sure.
So knowing that we were having this creative problem, in writing a fully formed season two in a reasonable time frame. And I think a reasonable time frame would be if we get season two out by November, that feels good to me. You know, that we're on par with many of the other HBO programs with one new season a year or something like that. But I really had hopes that we could do better or faster. We are working on right now an interstitial season of maybe six or eight episodes that explains, goes back in time 10 years, 12 years, and explains NORVAD. If you recall, NORVAD is the political scandal in which Vice President Victor Garzas and Charles Dunwock are somehow tied together in some sort of money for influence deal, but it's never really explained. I wanted to go back and do that.
Sure.
I have some ideas about how we can borrow from historic storylines from both the savings and loans crisis of the 80s and then the mortgage crisis of the 2000s and stitch something together. So I'm super happy with where we are with that. It's a compelling, interesting story. We haven't finished that one either. It's just a lot of work. And if we somehow were able to do this full time, it would go faster, but we're not.
That's the classic thing of the supposed overnight success, like a big band that's burst onto the scene with an amazing first album. It's because they've been working on it for 10, 15, 20 years. And then Right. Their next album, they've got a lot less time to work on it. They've got a lot more disposable income to pursue other hobbies with. And I'm not saying you guys are on heavy drugs or anything, but
nor do we have any more disposable income, that's for sure. But yeah, Absolutely, we are in our sophomore slump. It is true. That doesn't mean we're not giving up. And in fact, the worst that could happen is that we realize that we need to expand our team, and just that we can't make it all happen on a, you know, with three guys meeting every other week to discuss things. So, but it's definitely going to happen.
Well, you know, if you need inspiration, and I've heard there's a really good reality program on C-SPAN.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's some crazy goings on.
I catch snippets of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I could keep asking you stuff about the actual series, about the content, and I've been trying not to because not everyone's heard it yet.
Well, go ahead. I don't mind at all, and I've got time, so.
Well, you know, it was interesting in episode one, for instance, where President Pierce tells his wife that he's got to keep a secret from her, but he's not going to tell her what the secret is. And he's not going to lie to her. And he makes that point, is that he's not going to lie to her. And he could have just lied to her, basically. It would have been almost as bad. But there was that distinction. And I was wondering if that was, in fact, to position him as a not naturally bad guy. And he's only acting out of fervent duty as he sees it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the first episode we have to establish who Pierce is, who his real character is. And I don't know that you could do that better with a small, intimate conversation with someone you've known for 30 years. You know, we learned a lot in the conversations between Pierce, Oliver, and Gwen. That being one of them, that he respects honesty, but at the same time, you know, has limits. We also learned that she has an enormous influence on him, and then he cares about her opinion. It was absolutely deliberate. Some of the dialogue between the two of them, we ought to put out some of the early episodes because it really got rewritten completely, and some of the dialogue between those two was so real. It moved me, certainly as a married man. You know, this is what you know, two spouses sound like. It's the best mistake he could have made, you know, of all the mistakes he was confronted with. And I think that's what, you know, Pierce does. He's excellent at surveying his options and choosing the least bad one. Maybe.
Is there anything else you wanted to cover that we maybe haven't discussed?
No, I mean, I'm while our podcast audience is pretty large, you know, our social media audience is feeble. I mean, I think we have 600 Twitter followers and 300 Facebook followers. I mean, we just haven't put any effort into that, really, which is a shame because I just love interacting with the fans of Terms. They are so enthusiastic and often so insightful to be able to point to different things that we either hinted at, thought no one would get, or we ourselves didn't see. It's just fantastic to create something and then see it completely afresh in someone else's eyes. So I really wish if I do have any call to action here, please, you know, if you liked Terms, you know, join us on Facebook or Twitter and always reach out. I try to be pretty responsive.
Yeah, I can back that up. I'm sure I messaged you whenever it was a couple of weeks ago and you got back to me within an hour or two, I think. And it was just one of those messages like, hey, I found Terms and I binged it and loved it. And when season two, there's that question again.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, this is your chance as well to tell people how they can get in touch, where they can listen to the show, where they can get all the bonus features, if there's any, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I wish there were bonus features. I'm seriously considering putting out the unreleased first edits of episode one. There's at least two versions, so that would be interesting, but it's not available yet. The easiest thing to do if you're interested in finding about more about Terms is to go to termspodcast.com. From there, you'll be able to find a link to listen to the show, either through iTunes or some other podcatcher, or listen to the episodes directly from the website. There's also our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts are linked there. It should be all pretty available. I think the first four episodes have transcripts available if you'd like to read along. I need to get on that and finish the rest of them. But other than that, yeah, it's a good place to start. And after you've finish the series, find me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know what you thought.
Excellent. Well, I think it's a great idea to put the scripts out, particularly for the benefit of people listening to this podcast, because there's a lot of writers listen to the podcast who would be interesting in maybe listening to the feed, how you've put it out, and then comparing it to the original stuff and maybe deciding how you made that decision to edit from one to the other. Right. And the choices you made, because again, you know, it's all about how things are created. And when you learn the nuts and bolts, then you can see how something becomes a car from scrap metal, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully it helps to learn how to make these things ourselves. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the scripts. I take it you just wrote them as opposed to recorded any dialogue or anything?
Oh, for the scripts?
Yeah, the original ones that didn't make it into the final.
Oh, no. We have fully edited, finished episodes.
Wow.
That never aired because we wanted to go back and redo them. So, yeah, that's clearly a bonus feature. Maybe I'll put it out.
So is that something you could maybe even offer as an incentive, a reward for Patreon? Or did you have a Patreon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I should probably go ahead and talk about this because it's, you know, I just had a phone call with Patreon and Terms was nominated for an award by a podcast convention, podcast movement in Anaheim. And we're going there later this month. So hopefully I'll see some of you. Rob and I are going. But as a part of that, I started a conversation with Patreon. Is it Patreon? Patreon? You know, I really don't know.
I've heard Patreon most often.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because patron. So Patreon, and I think that's probably a excellent platform for us. In fact, we have a Patreon page. I put it together, you know, in my exploration of it. We have a single $1 a month supporter. So thank you, whoever you are, but we haven't advertised it. And I think that's probably the model moving forward. Honestly, the ad revenue does not match the expenses that go into a production like Terms, at least not yet. That's dependent on audience size and, just a few, 10% of our current audience giving $1 to $5 a month would make an enormous difference and enable us to put out a lot more product a lot faster. And that's all it is. It's a resource game. You know, when we're all busy, we have to prioritize and money helps, you know, make those priorities clear.
So if we want to sign up to Patreon on your behalf, is there a particular thing we search for? Is it just simply Terms?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking right now. You can hear me typing. I believe it is just Patreon/Terms. One other thing for podcasts who are just starting out, if you want to make an impact in the internet world, please think about your search terms. We did not. Terms podcasts, although finally, you know, we do get some of the top hits. As soon as you get to page two, it's all podcast terms you may not have heard of, terms of use of using this podcast. We're just washed out. Terms was a horrible name. I mean, a very clever one, I think, but in general, a horrible name.
Right. I mean, you could have called it the search results podcast or something.
Right, exactly.
I take it you're on iTunes and everything else. I mean, I think I went straight to the website, but mm-hmm. You're in all the usual places, all the podcast apps and so on.
I think so. We may or may not be on Google Play. I don't know that how much that matters.
That's pretty new, actually, in terms of audio dramas being on there. So you might be ahead of the curve, but yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure everyone will find you anyway.
But iTunes is the gorilla in the room, and we're certainly there.
Yeah. We've been saying for years, and I've been waiting for that to change, but it seems still to be the case that iTunes is where, you know, you're most likely to get them there than almost anywhere else.
Right.
You'll get them, audio dramas, in other places as well, but you might as well just start at iTunes every time. So that's good. Anyway, it's been really good speaking to you today. And I realize that we've run on quite a bit.
Oh, it's all right.
So I'd love to come back to you at some point during or after season two airs and pick it up again and see where we are.
Okay, sure.
And if I can ask you one more thing.
Yeah.
What about yourself in terms of audio drama or even just podcasts? What are you a fan of?
Oh, Robert. Here's the awful truth. And this is true with my music recording as well. As soon as I begin to consume another person's product, another podcast, audio drama, I'll get maybe 7 minutes into an episode and think, oh my God, I am now so charged up and have so many ideas. I need to go work on terms. The same thing happens to me when I'm listening to a new album or even seeing, you know, live music. Oh God, that has just influenced me or inspired me or shown me what not to do or solve a problem I have. I need to leave, stop consuming and go work. And so I have a horribly paltry list of podcasts, audio dramas that I've actually been able to pay attention to. And so I feel neglectful of the community, and I'm sorry to everyone.
You're definitely not alone there. I know a few people that are kind of the same, saying, yeah, I don't really listen to a lot of stuff, and I'm more keen to make it. But that'll be inspiring to some people in a way, because, you know, Quentin Tarantino quit film school, for instance, and went to the movies instead.
Right.
In order to learn how it's done by observing it and soaking it up. And he got so many ideas and then took it from there and did it his own way. So it's not necessarily an entirely bad thing. And one of the main bits of advice we've given out on the podcast in terms of creativity is go out for a walk or do something mundane like housework and your mind will tick over. Or the other one was put your phone down and just stop for a minute. If you're in a waiting room or you're driving, turn the radio off and just look around, take in the sights, the smells. And the biggest one for me is listen to other people's work for as long as you need to get inspiration, for instance. I mean, that's why I went on the group myself and said, hey, does anyone know of any political podcasts? Because I hadn't listened to anything for quite a while. My free time to do that, I think I spent watching The West Wing. And it was only when that was exhausted, I then turned to the hive mind and said, right, give me something I'll like because I haven't heard anything I like for a while because I'm terrible for listening to audio dramas myself. I've got a list as long as your arm of stuff that I've been told I need to hear and I still haven't. But we can improve.
Oh, yeah.
We can maybe make it a team effort. We'll encourage each other to, you know, check this one or that one out. So I don't know where to start in terms of telling you what to listen to. Ask in the group, and I'm sure they'll give you a list.
Right.
As long as two arms.
Yeah. Well, I already have a list, you know, of all the podcasts that I've listened to 7 minutes of and need to continue. So there are plenty of them, and I really ought to pay more attention. It's just my lack of attention span, and I guess dedication to my own work. But yeah, gosh, there's so many and so much talent available, you know, to be had. It's a wonderful time.
Well, again, it's been marvelous to finally talk to you, and I wish you the best of luck in getting season two out, if only because I want to hear it myself for my own enjoyment. I'm really looking forward to it. And if there's anything that we at the podcast can do for you or people in the group, then you have only to ask, I'm sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I probably will.
Right. Great. I look forward to it. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Have a nice evening.
Thanks, Lindsay.
All right.